trying to figure out where you're going to be working next. You know that you've got skills from the military, but you're also figuring out, how do I take what I know about the military, my branch of service, or the things that they need when they're changing their force design? Where do I go? Well, that's what this podcast is going to talk about. We have Brady Petrillo, a former Marine Corps officer who retired, that is now a program manager for a tech development company called Corvid Technologies. And he's going to give us tips on how to follow in his footsteps, but also some very practical advice on how to prepare for our own transition. So if you like that, if that's something that interests you, please stay tuned. Brady Petrillo, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so in case you some people might notice, my sister's not on the podcast. Normally, she's my co-host, but Trinity Lazalde is our guest co-host. He works with me at Mar4Com. And hey, thanks for filling in for Sis. I appreciate it. I'm really excited about this thing. Okay, first of all, to be transparent, Brady and I have known each other for a while. We've been on deployments since Afghanistan, but now he's working in the tech sector. Specifically, he transitioned and retired out of the Marine Corps and is doing kind of that project or that program management portfolio for a tech development company. Brady, I might be messing it up, but trust me, I'm going to give you plenty of opportunity to tell me how wrong I am. No, but this is going to be interesting, and I'm drinking a little bit. It's just kind of a virtual cocktail moment. So cheers.
Cheers.
So I'm going to ask you the dangerously open-ended question, Brady. Where did you grow up? How did you join the Marine Corps? And what did you do in there?
Oh, well, so I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania. And, you know, in retrospect, it was a really great place to grow up. But I couldn't wait to get out. So, you know, just got out, went to college as far away as I could get, which was Boston. Went to school 4 years there, stayed an extra year. I was working at a restaurant. I was, you know, madly in love with a girl. And then one day she said that she didn't want anything to do with me anymore. And the next day I was going to work. Okay. I was a waiter at a restaurant. I was going to work in my waiter clothes, black pants, white shirt. And across the street, I see a guy in the exact same clothes, looked exactly like me, but 20 years older. And it, like, life had just punched him in the face. So, you know, I said to myself, fuck that. That's not going to be me. So I went to work. I gave him my 2 weeks notice. In that 2 week period, I sold everything that I owned. I bought a whole bunch of American Express traveler's checks because I'm so old. That was a thing back after, you know, like 22 years ago, 25 years ago. Bought a ticket to Europe, and I spent a year backpacking through Europe. And about halfway through, I realized that I didn't have a job and I had no idea what I wanted to do in the future. So I came from a military family. All my uncles had served. And so I figured, you know, it worked out well for them. It could probably work out well for me. I decided against the Army because I had spoken to an Army recruiter years before, and it was just creepy. I didn't want to
creepy,
like, hey, you know, join the Army, you know, you can buy a car, you know, it's just like, okay, dude, I want to join to serve, not to buy a car. But Anyways, I didn't want to be in the Air Force cause I was blind as a bat. And I thought all the Air Force did was fly planes. Didn't want to be in the Navy because, I didn't want to float around on a ship all the time. Joke's on me, 11th Mew. that left the Marine Corps, and you know, I emailed a recruiter from, I remember where it was too. I was in Strasbourg, France, in an internet cafe because that was a thing back then too, and just to get some information, and came back to the States after I had finished, you know, eating baguettes and drinking French beer, and 6 months later, I was in Quantico.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, that could be my future. I don't want that to be my future.
Yeah.
Type moment. No. All right. Yeah. So, all right. Give us just a kind of an overview. Like, what did you do in the Marine Corps, your MOS, just overview of experience.
So I was an engineer. my undergrad was in photography, so you know, I thought I was going to be Robert Capa taking, you know, great combat photos, but it turns out that the only people that officers that do that are chief warrant officers.
Now I don't feel so bad about my poli-sci degree.
Oh yeah, yeah. The Marine Corps just said that, hey, we think you'd make a great combat engineer. So I, combat engineer, went out to 7th ESB, was there for the invasion, was selected to be the MU debt commander for the engineers for the 11th MU. So MSSG 11, went out to Iraq Part 2, came back, and I had orders to Korea. I was going to be one of two engineer officers there. And somewhere between getting on the plane in Iraq and landing in Kuwait, those orders fizzled and didn't leave many options left except for the operations officer in RS Cleveland. So I went out on from 05 to 08 was my recruiting tour, which was during a plus up, and it was like a 3-year colonoscopy. But
that's a great description. I don't know, Trinity. What do you think? Is that close?
That sounds about right. Brady, if you're aware, I was on the street in Norfolk, Virginia from 04 to 07 on a, on production recruiter. I completely feel you. And next thing you know, like, I probably wrote 2 zeros the entire time on there, but going to see the XO, he had less hair than I did at the time. So, yeah. I feel your pain.
That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, cheers. I have more PTSD from that than anything else, but I digress. The best thing about that tour was I met my wife. So I got her drunk and hypothermic at a Browns game, and she agreed to go to the Marine Corps ball with me. And, then we got married.
if I can just add in there, like, the only reason I'm from Texas, and the only reason I was a recruiter in Norfolk, Virginia was because my wife, it was a sailor on the USS Iwo Jima in Norfolk, Virginia, and I got hooked up. But after that, it's like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm doing the best I can, coach. And I did, and I survived. And, you know, I got my recruiter ribbon, which should be a medal. But yeah, no, I know exactly how you feel. Yeah.
So post-recruiting, it was off to lovely 29 Palms to help stand up 3rd Combat Engineer Battalion.
That was your reward duty.
Yeah. But it was actually a fantastic tour. We had a great battalion standing up, great Marines, you know, just officers and enlisted. It was one of the best tours out there. Alpha Company, I had great Marines working for me. It was a rough deployment. We lost three guys, had a lot of wounded guys. But the Marines really, really came through. It was fantastic. Fantastic group. After that, what did I do? Oh my God, they sent me to school. Did they? No, I did a second tour. I did a second tour of 3rd CEB as the OPSO. And then they sent me to school after that. So I was off to Quantico, then off to 1st Marine Division because they needed I was going to be the engineer for the division. And that lasted from the time that I walked in the building until I met the three and said, hey, we need a planner. You went to Command and Staff College. You're a planner now. So I had a interesting tour there. It was lots of stress trying to figure out where we're going to get more folks and source people to friggin' deploy. So I started out as a planner, ended up as the COPSO. But, I met some great people there too. It was a good time. And then after that, ISIS happened. And so right in the middle is like, they sent me down to 1st CEB to be the OPSO. And once again, that lasted from the time that I checked out of 1st Marine Division and checked into 1st CEB to tell me that, hey, you know, we are deploying you in support of this training team for the 7th Iraqi Armor Division, and you're headed to Al Asad. So we had a 30-day workup. Things kind of calmed down a little bit. It was the midterm elections right then. I don't think the president wanted to announce any major troop deployments during that. But as soon as that was over, we got our orders and flew in, and we were supporting – it was an interesting tour. We were supporting the the Iraqis. And at that time, every time the Iraqis were going up against ISIS, it was like an ISIS resupply mission because they would just run like hell. They eventually got their shit together and they pushed them back. But it was interesting trying to coach some guys who were like, fuck this. Anyways.
ISIS resupply mission. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Unfortunate. Most unfortunate.
Unfortunate. So, so about halfway into that deployment, you know, you can't really talk to your family. You can't talk to anybody, but my monitor found me and told me, hey, we're short touring you and we're sending you back on recruiting duty to 4th Marine Corps District in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And I said, I've already done a tour with the 4th. Can you send me somewhere else? Maybe like the 12th, someplace nice and sunny. But no, I got to go to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which was really great. But, you know, another recruiting tour. People were fantastic that I was working with. You know, when you work with some dedicated folks like the 8412s, you're really impressed with what some folks can do and the amount of time and effort they put into making sure people are successful. So I had a great time there. People were great. It was quite different than being an OPSO in a recruiting station during the plus up. So after that, I got a phone call. I had been on the alt list for command. And in March of 18, I got a phone call from the monitor saying, hey, we're fleeting you up to take over MWSS 171. So do you have any questions? Like, yeah, what's an MWSS and where is it? So they told me Okinawa or Iwakuni. And I'm like, okay, all right, let's make it happen. The wife was pretty surprised, but you know, March, April, May, 2 months later, two and a half months later, we had sold the house, packed everything up, and we're on a plane over to Japan.
Wow, 2.5 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's quick. Saw you there. Yeah. You're the CO. I was your OPSO. I only had like a year there when you were there.
Yeah.
And then after that, after your 171 tour, what were like the next several duty stations?
They sent me back to school, Air War College in Montgomery, Alabama. It was fun because they were looking for people to go into their new space cadre. Their Space Force was just standing up and they wanted to do some space-centric education for the folks that were going to come into the school. So they wanted a Marine to be part of it, and I raised my hand, and they accepted me. So I got to do some really, really cool stuff. And, you know, towards the end, talk to the monitors, like, hey, I have this great education. I know a lot about space stuff. I know we're standing up space stuff. Can I go do space stuff? And the Marine Corps was like, no, you're going to go to Japan and be the G3 for MAR-4J that we're standing up. So once again, had orders in hand. And then the Marine Corps had just moved too fast for everyone else, and they had to delay it a year, which meant my orders fizzled. And at that time, I was like, the only time in my entire career, my monitor had asked me, what do you want to do? I want to go to Europe. And so they sent me to Europe and a bunch of other guys that had been part of the whole MAR-4J stand-up cadre. And I ended up at Special Operations Command Africa.
All right. And that was your last duty station, right?
That was my last duty station.
Okay. SOC-AF.
Yeah.
So at what point in time did you kind of make the mental decision to transition? Like what was the calculus? And I say transition, you know, in your case, it was a retirement.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife and I had a deal that we were going to stick around for one look at 06. And I didn't get selected, so we decided that it was time to go, and we went.
Well, that's so, pretty clear criteria. It's like no-go,
oh, yeah.
Go, no-go criteria. All right. All right, so yeah. what were the, some of the considerations? I mean, like, so I'm sure you had more of a plan than if I got past the first time on the first look.
Yeah.
And transitioning out of an OCONUS duty station, that adds a layer of complexity. What was your thought process? What was your game plan?
So there's, when you leave from an OCONUS duty station, you can, unless you have a waiver, you need to move out from Lejeune or Pendleton. So I initially wanted to go to Lejeune because we wanted to settle in the Charlotte area, but come to find out that, you know, I would have to be there for an indeterminate amount of time in order for them to process my DD-214 and all that other stuff and set me up for terminal leave. So I decided that it'd probably be best if we went out of Pendleton, and because my mother-in-law is there in her house, so the whole family could camp there rather than staying in a hotel or motel in Lejeune, which was not the preferred option. So went out of Pendleton instead.
Okay. All right. Any family considerations? I mean, we talk about it's not just you transitioning out of the military. What were some of the thought process regarding it? Like, what's the makeup of your family, and what were some of the considerations as you were getting ready to retire?
So it's a wife, two boys, and really my major consideration has been my wife's career. And I have to plug working spouses here, because my wife has been lucky, and she's had very supportive companies that she's worked for over the years. But except for a short stint when we were in 29 Palms, she's been able to continue her career. And that's, I'm not going to mention the company that she worked for, but they've all been extremely supportive in allowing her to not only move from 29 Palms to Quantico to Japan to Germany and continue working. And she's she a couple of years ago moved past me as far as the salaries go, and to the point where I started calling the Marine Corps my hobby. But I know a lot of folks out there aren't as lucky as we are in this, but it's having my wife be able to have a career has made things so much less stressful for me during my transition, because I didn't have to worry about putting food on the table for my family. So it just really helped things out. Brooke, you're awesome. I love you.
There we go. We got it. It's on record.
Shut up.
We'll make a clip of this, by the way. Share it on Facebook.
That has to be the Instagram reel right there.
100%. 100%. Okay. So what are you going to give me in trade? Take care of you. No, that's
hashtag Brooke.
That's right. No, you know, I think one of the – and we haven't had anybody on the podcast yet, but one of the good things is that I'm seeing a growth and focus on helping military spouses gain employment and keep employment. So it's great. I mean, like, it's a great success story as far as, you know, both spouses that want to work are able to work despite OCONUS deployments. I mean, that's a great news story. So that's awesome. When you got out, what kind of resources did you use to help you with your transition?
So it's fascinating, because when I put a post on LinkedIn that I had my DD-214 that I had canceled my DTCC, which is the greatest thing in the world. The day that I called them and said, "Hey, I'm burning this thing," it was like a weight had been lifted off my shoulder. Oh, it was great. But so I posted that, and folks that I hadn't talked to in years just reached out to me and asked if I needed anything. This guy Mike, who I was his platoon commander 20 years ago, and he clearly made better decisions than me, because he's a well off financial guy now, very smart.
Yeah.
Reached out and said if I needed anything, which is great. You know, it's great for your morale when folks that, you know, you had worked with years before, hey, what's going on? Tim reached out and said, if, asked if I needed anything, and said, wanted to try to get me into some sort of, the timing didn't work out, but into some sort of apprenticeship program that he runs. Fantastic guy. Mick from Transition Overwatch reached out to me. Another great resource for veterans that are transitioning out. Helps you find some jobs. Great guys.
Transition Overwatch. All right.
Transition Overwatch. Absolutely. And Marcy, one of my wife's friends who runs a resume building business that is directed towards, you know, college grads. She only likes working with the young guys. She made an exception for me and reviewed my resume, which was an incredible help.
Brady, so you had all these people that you knew that you had networked with, or maybe not even deliberately networked with, but people that you knew throughout your experience. Mm-hmm. They all picked up on this because of a Facebook posting, or how did that work out? How did they get word of the fact that you were retiring?
I don't have really any social media except for LinkedIn. And so I just posted that I was looking for work after I had walked off Pendleton with my DD-214, and people started reaching out to me, which was fantastic. And it was a great help.
Oh, that's great, man. That's awesome to hear. It's like just another plug for why to have a LinkedIn profile.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
100%. Yeah. So, you know, how did that translate? Walk me through how you get from retirement to landing your current position. What's that story?
So, my job essentially, while I was on terminal leave, was researching what opportunities were out there and applying to jobs. So I would start my day after the, you know, getting the kids up and out, and I would see what was out there, see what interests me. And again, it kind of goes back to the fact that my wife was working, and so I had the luxury of being able to see what was out there, see what interested me, rather than trying to find the first thing that would hire me. So I would take a look at my background, what I thought my strengths were, and I would tailor my resume to whatever job position I was looking for, and submit it on that. And just one note for folks that are transitioning, it is frustrating and annoying when you are submitting resumes online to all these different companies, because you're going to have to say, you're going to have to input the same resume information 100 times on 100 different websites, but you're just going to have to get used to it. All the interfaces are different, and it requires you to do a lot of the same stuff over and over again, but you get used to it.
Okay. And so you kind of use a shotgun methodology, it sounds like, but how did that translate to where you're currently working? Where's the connection?
So I probably put in about 80 to 100 resumes to different places. And that turned into 3 interviews, 2 job offers, and 1 actual job. And the place that I currently work at, I had been very interested in it. A family friend on Brookside had mentioned that there was a tech company pretty close to where we lived that did a lot of the things, you know, defense type contracting, high power computing, that type of thing that might be up my alley. So every day or two, I would just look at their website to see if there's anything that I could potentially fit in. And one day they put in a UAV manager, a portfolio manager, but they wanted them in DC. So I figured, why not? I'm local. Maybe it can be remote to DC. I have no issue traveling. I'm in Phoenix right now. Clearly I have no issue traveling, but they needed a guy on site, but my now boss took a look at my resume. He's a former Navy guy, and he was able to take a look at a number of things that I did and felt that I would be a value add to the team. So here I am today at Corvid Technologies.
No kidding. It was a veteran connection.
Absolutely.
100%. And what, did you feel like you had – so do you think that he was able to read in between the lines of what your tailored resume or civilian speak resume was? Like, how did that work? Because, I mean, I think that's part of the challenge too, right? Like, we've got this military lingo and we're trying to generate a resume that's in the right civilian or corporate lexicon. Was that something that he picked up on, this other veteran picked up on, just by reading your resume, or was it based on a conversation you had? What was that like? What do you think?
He understood what I did, where I had been, and I think what my potential value to the company would be. But, and it's a challenge taking everything that you've done in the military and translating it into something that somebody who may have never served can understand. And I think there's a ton of different ways to do it. I picked one. I put my actual, the billet that I had filled when I was in the military, and I put a description next to it of what that was and what I had accomplished in that role. And that seemed to work. Well, it worked three times at least.
Okay. That's great. So your current job is it's a program management job. How would you describe the programs or the portfolio that you manage, and what's the name of your company? What do they do?
Company's name is Corvid Technologies. They are a high-tech engineering firm. I work with, about 300 PhDs and master's level folks that figure out some really wicked problems. And, I work in, I do a little bit of missile stuff. I do a little bit of maritime lethality stuff. I'm do some fire assessment things, and I really enjoy it.
What did you learn in your military experience that you think kind of helped you with your current position?
So we interact a lot with the Department of Defense just for different things that we do. And I think just having been in the military for 22 years, I'm able to understand and translate a lot of the needs for some of the folks that I work with. And also finding folks to talk to help solve some problems.
Okay, so what did you have any experiences throughout your military career that helped you perform in your current job, in your current position?
Yeah, I do. I think that just knowing where to go to find some of the answers that the folks that I was working with were looking for was beneficial. So I think that, I was able to add value there. Sometimes, you have some folks that want to build or make or design a thing, and they just need information, and I can be helpful in pointing them in the right direction or getting it for them.
So you have a lot of military client interaction. I mean, is that a fair statement?
We do, in a sense. We work with a lot of the primes, like Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, L3 Harris, those folks. But yeah, that's an accurate statement.
Okay, so it sounds like instead of it being direct business to government relationships, it's business to business relationships. And those businesses have government contracts, so you provide a service that sometimes the contracted entity needs to outsource in order to get a critical portion of their job done. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, we subcontract to a lot of those companies.
Okay,
Different projects. Cool. That, we provide a unique ability to accomplish something for them or design something for them or build it. Yeah.
Okay. So, and I guess, so what I'm thinking about is you're in a position where you actually have the ability to use not only the skills that you developed in the military, but also your military knowledge, because you're working for a company that also helps with technology development that has military application. So if somebody wanted to follow in your footsteps, is there something like, and they're getting ready to transition, is there anything you could think of that they could do in order to either make them better prepared, more competitive, or to be able to sell their skills that add value, business value, to a company similar to yours?
Sometimes, a lot of times, I think I got lucky in that my boss who served in the Navy got a hold of my resume. I think probably one of the best things you can do is translate your resume as best as you think you can, so that a civilian can understand it, and run it by your friends, run it by your civilian friends, mom, dad, aunt, uncle, whoever, just so there's a level of common understanding in your resume that it makes sense to someone. Get some mentors outside of your echo chamber in the military, so that, you know, you can get some feedback on what you're writing and if it makes sense and if it's going to kind of push the buttons that you want pushed when you're applying to different companies. And if you want to do something along my lines, I mean, there's plenty of opportunities with some of the bigger companies. I'm with one of, a smaller company, but there's lots of other companies out there as well that you can take a look at. I love to plug my company because I'm having a great time here and they take really good care of their employees. But there's a tremendous opportunity out there for folks. And there's more organizations that want to help you than I could count. I mentioned Transition Overwatch, which awesome bunch of guys. But there's so many out there that want, can, and will help you.
All right. Outstanding. Hey, Trinity, what am I not thinking of? You have any questions for Brady?
I do. Brady, first of all, thank you for everything you've been sharing so far. I've just been picking up keywords from, like, you know, just straight up luck. You know, I can't attribute that to so many things we have, but, you know, that's a symbol of humility that sometimes a lot of transitioning service members don't have, but you embrace that and you show that's a simple part of it. Translating your historical, like, you know, skills that you've earned and you've pretty much sharpened over the years, and then, you know, embracing the mentor. And I have multiple mentors now, as you know, full disclosure, I'm like retiring in the next few months right now. So I'm like, get every mentor I have. I'm like, yeah. You know, what do you got for me, bro? Like, you know, tell me what you got. You know, and Cap was kind enough to tell me, give me like the cliff notes of your story right now. And I mean, like, this guy just got out, like, you know, less than a year ago. And I'm like, he's fresh. Like, he knows how it is. He knows how it is right now. But that's key to us right now. And that's very valuable skill. So I just want to say thank you for all that you've shared with us so far. The one question that I have that, you know, like, Cap has been stealing my thunder, because every question that I, like, meticulously, like, wrote down today, like, hey, like, I'm gonna ask Brady this. This is a stump question. I'm gonna ask him this, and like, then Cap beat me to it, and I'm like, okay, I guess I'm just not gonna ask that. But one question that he hasn't asked, and thankfully my lovely wife, who's a Navy veteran, who, like, I told I was doing this, and she said you should ask him this, and I'm like, yeah, and like, you know, now that you're in a post active duty and, you know, in a well-established civilian career, is it any, how do you balance the work-life balance as a fully transitioned civilian? Because we all know what it's like to be an active duty service member, you know, serving as an OPSO or a CO, or in my case, a master gunnery sergeant. But now you are just Brady doing your, you know, as a program management specialist at Corvid Industries, how do you manage that work-life balance? Like, is it easy for you? Is it a challenge for you? Is it harder? Is it easier?
It's so much easier. Life is great. And, you know, for transitioning folks, you're going to be okay. It's all going to be okay. You're going to find what you love. And I'm happy. I come home every day, see my kids. Well, I'm in Phoenix for a meeting now. So technically that's not totally true, but, you know, I get to see my kids grow up. They get to stay in the same schools with friends that they don't have to leave every 2 to 3 years. Everybody's happy. And, you know, it's when my wife and I broke the news to the kids that, hey, you know, dad's retiring. It was like a collective sigh of relief. We get to have friends. You know, we don't get to move all the time anymore. Woo! All right. So they've been troopers for years, and now it's, you know, it's their time. So it's been a great transition. I'm happy. My wife's happy. My kids are happy. Yeah. So I had nothing to complain about.
Looks like you're on TID. You got to submit a voucher.
So let me tell you something. So there is no such thing as DTS or the government travel charge card in the real world. It was, I take my receipts to Veronica, who's awesome, and she runs them, and then I get reimbursed. I don't have a JTR. It's actually, you know, pretty fantastic and, dare I say, efficient.
Yes. Say it ain't so.
Yeah, well, say there aren't 60 people in the approval chain anymore. Someone with common sense can take a look at it and say, is this guy trying to rip off the company or not? Anyways.
You know, it's because that one guy that uses their government travel charge card at Hooters.
I know.
They revise the JTR, JFTR, hoses up the rest. Anyway, like years and years of that compounds.
No, I just went into the strip club to use the ATM. Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Not authorized. Sorry, taxpayers. We're going to punish everybody else, and you're going to follow these extra 20 steps. Yeah, but very glad to hear that there it's maybe a different shade of green on the other side of the fence. I'm glad to hear it's going well for you. Mm-hmm. Hey, Trinity, anything else?
No. Thanks to Brady, hope is a COA.
It is. Hey, oh, yeah. Hope is a course of action. I always used to tell people it's bam shish. H is for hope.
Bam shish. Why didn't you let me use that when I was your opso?
I wouldn't have had a problem with it.
Well, it's my job to not use that as your opso.
Your opso might have a problem with that.
That's right. All right. Well, go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, for full disclosure, I was the opso for 271 for 3 years. But yeah, go ahead.
You're great American.
Okay. That's right. That's right. We have some.
I know your pain. I was there.
Common connections. That's right. WTI.
Yeah, same S, different smell.
That's right. I need my TE and then some. So, okay. Well, let's get close to wrapping this up. I'm going to ask you the same question I ask everybody that comes on the podcast. If there are two, three things that you want the listeners to remember as they prepare for their own transition, what are they?
Hold on. I dropped my earphone.
It's not as bad as me. It's okay.
You're a mess, okay, Brady. Right. You're a mess.
I am. Well, you know. I'm a civilian now. I can be a mess if I want to.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Three things to remember. You're going to be fine. Transitioning can be tough, but, you know, you're going to be A-okay. It's all right. There's more resources than you're going to be able to count out there to help you. TRS is just the first step. They're going to let you know about a bunch of them, but there's so many out there. And lastly, life after the military is pretty damn good. So it's all good. You're going to be fine.
All right. I like it. And so we think of questions, but maybe the listeners can think of other questions that we didn't think of, or that maybe they're interested in doing what it is that you do. How can individuals get in touch with you or learn more about your company?
I have no social media except for LinkedIn. So I can be found on LinkedIn, Brady Petrillo. You see my smiling face on there, and that's it. And I work at Corvid Technologies, corvidtech.com. If you want to check them out, great company.
All right. Outstanding. All right. Well, hey, Brady, it was great talking to you. Great sharing a virtual drink. Thank you so much for the information. I mean, quite frankly, what you're doing is very interesting to me. I've got a year before I retire. But then again, the general notes are helpful. I mean, Trinity, I'm sure you'd agree.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, 100%. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast. And we'll definitely be in touch.
Cap, always a pleasure. Trinity, great meeting you. Take care, guys. Have a good night.
All right, take care. And Brady Petrillo has left the virtual studio. So what do you think? Any thoughts or takeaways?
My biggest takeaway right now is that everything's going to be okay. I'm like 3 months away from my retirement ceremony. And it's like, you know, a few months away from my actual EAS. And I get my last Marine Corps paycheck. And, you know, we're going to be okay. I'm not, you know, as an E9 in the Marine Corps, 24 years, you know, I'm no one's starving. My kids are going to be all right. But there's that apprehensiveness, that hesitation that you feel when you're this close to the end. And you can't help but feel that because we are conditioned as Marines, as service members, when we're this close to the end, like, hey, are the lights going to be on? Are kids going to be fed? Can I provide the same quality of life that I've worked so hard to attain? And it keeps you up at night. You know, we've all been through combat. We've all been through stressful situations. And this is the type of stuff at the end where it's like, it gives you some sense of pause. And Brady contributed to the many other post-retirees that said, hey, everything's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. There's no need to worry about. Do what you need to do, and everything will be all right in the end. And he contributed to it, and I really appreciated that. And as somebody who is in his position today, saying stuff like that means a lot to someone like myself, who I can only speak for, but I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. I'm not there yet. I'm not feeling the pressure just yet. I'm sure I'm going to. So you were a canvassing recruiter, and I'm sure this is applicable to any branch of service, but I'm trying to think of a parallel or a corollary. I remember watching my RI during when we get new join recruiters joining the recruiting station that I was CEO of RS Buffalo. And I remember him telling the recruiters, like, look, you can't see the process. You haven't realized like the rewards of sticking with the process, because the contract chain is long. But if you put your faith in the system and you do what it is that we're telling you to do, it's going to produce results on the back end. And sales is a kind of a weird thing, because it's not like construction, right? And that's kind of the realm that I'm from, part of the realm that I'm from, where you know that, listen, I've got skilled labor. If I add material, I've got permits, I can go to this location and we can build, and I've got a plan to sustain them. It's going to produce a building. But the granularity in something that's such a human dynamic, where it's the interaction between interviewee and interviewer, it's the interaction between transitioning service member or somebody else. It's very human. It's very hard to predict, but there's a system that has been plotted, and you've got these skills. And so your skills, your energy, you go through the motion, but deliberately, it's going to produce the results that you want on the back end.
It will.
Yeah.
Well, and they call it what you will. Like, they called it one thing when I was on the street. They call it something different now. It's being systematic. It's being consistent. It's processing the data. Like, the more people you talk to, the more people you convince, the more you believe in your product. And it, you know, there's one thing that one of my mentors taught me years ago, and it's like, the Marine Corps doesn't buy you. I'm sorry, the Marine Corps, someone doesn't buy the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps buys you. If you can develop a story, and you could, and that story is you, and people believe in that. And over the years, I realized that a lot of products that become like not just the Marine Corps, but just stuff in general that's been really popular amongst consumers, is that there's a story related to that. So one thing that makes Marine Corps recruiters so successful is they put themselves out there. They relate the story to that. And the Marine Corps, if anything, has been so successful is because, and they made the recruiting goals because they sell a story, and the story is the Marine Corps itself, and makes us successful.
Yeah. No matter how painful.
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Neither here nor there.
Yeah. So much to learn, Ryan. So much to learn.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to add one takeaway, and it's weak sauce compared to your takeaway.
No, not at all, man.
No. I'm going to just one. I'd put it out there. Okay, so I'm going to give a plug to Ruline Seminar. So I had the opportunity to attend an executive level seminar for transition by the Ruline company. Yeah, you went through it too. Mm-hmm. And I remember the gentleman that was teaching the class. Shame on me. His name is not immediately coming to my mind, but. Sage, he was talking about, you know, the tactics behind transitioning, and he's mentioned something about sending an email to like your top 10 people and then even having a top 100 of your contacts that you think might have either not that they're going to be hiring managers, but they're going to give pretty good intel on, you know, where to look. And so he spoke about it in terms of an email, but Brady's story was in terms of a LinkedIn posting. And what isn't, the power of being able to inform your network, whether they're a family member, whether they were somebody that you served with that is already in their new career in the civilian world, or whether they're just a contact because they were a corporate recruiter and somebody you added to your LinkedIn profile and connected with, those produce leads.
They do.
And to pass up on that is a mistake. So whether it's a LinkedIn profile and the connections and the followers that you've made and communicating through that network, or it's via email, don't discount the relationships that you've made with the people that particularly those that have gone before you, because you never know, they might be looking for somebody to fill a critical need in the company they're currently working in or in a company that they know of. And that's one of my takeaways.
Yeah, I know. So, I completely agree.
Yeah. So folks, that's it. That's all we got. And if you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star review. It helps us beat the metrics. If you're listening to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review. You can even do it on Spotify. You got to listen to the whole thing. Scroll down. Give us a review. Give us feedback. We're willing to listen to that because we're all about process improvement or recommendations on who we should interview next. You can also follow us on Instagram at newmissionct. Or you could send us an email at newmissionct@gmail.com. Give us some feedback. Tell us what you like, what you didn't. And then we'll just action it as soon as we can. And if you're preparing for your own transition, know that Trinity and I are right there with you. So until next time, stay focused. All right, that's that.